let's move along and get our weekly view from the north. I assume he's finally down from his 8-day cubby high, safely returned from Troy. Find his work for Comcast Sportsnet online, CSNNW.com. He's talking Ducks. He's got the podcast with Ms. Zamoranthus. You can find that along with his many thoughts on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how you doing?
Down from my Cubs high. I just got my new Sports Illustrated with Rizzo on the cover. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I guess after 108 years, I should allow for months rather than days. My bad.
Let's put it this way. We live in a state where marijuana is legal, and ain't one of them guys smoking pot higher than I am still.
Whoa, I see what you did there. Well played, well played. And you kept us, and you kept us both out of trouble, which I appreciate. Let's get to a topic you guys hit on early on the show. You thought heading to USC, you used the term overmatch. The Trojans were clicking. We know the Oregon problems. And then after you flat asked both coordinators about their teams possibly being in over their heads. How would you describe the response you got from coaches Lubick and Hoke?
Well, they didn't really want to sort of go there in terms of saying that it was flat out that, which, you know, you kind of understand. You might not want to put that out there. So I kind of got that. You know, I think they both expressed that, yeah, there were some spots where, you know, experience is a problem and things like that. But they also felt like they didn't play, you know, well from an execution standpoint. And, you know, after a while, I've been covering sports for a long time, and I've covered a lot of teams that when they were losing, they always talked about how we're not executing, we're not executing, we're not executing. Well, after a while, it's not just that you had bad days, it's that you're just not ready to not have bad days because you physically and mentally are not good enough to avoid poor execution. And sometimes bad execution is a product of the other guy just being better. So, like, you have to be perfect to avoid the other guy beating you because he's better. And I guarantee you there were times in the past where, you know, here's a great example. I remember when Oregon was playing Wyoming or something like that, and Darren Thomas, 2011, and DeAnthony Thomas goes the wrong way on a blitz protection and leaves Darren Thomas hanging out to dry. Well, any mortal quarterback is going to get sacked, but Darren figures it out and flicks it out to DeAnthony Thomas, who was supposed to pick up the blitz and didn't. Now, any average player is going to catch the ball and maybe get 8 yards. Great. But no, you flipped it out to DeAnthony Thomas, who proceeded to make every defender break their ankles, and he ran for a touchdown. So there's a situation where you screwed up. You didn't execute properly, but it was a 45-yard touchdown because you had two really good players who were able to make the play. And right now with Oregon, they don't have enough of players like that who are able to overcome poor execution to still make plays. And so, therefore, execution becomes paramount. And then you have a young team that just is not going to execute at a high level because you're just too young and inexperienced, and therefore you keep getting your butt kicked.
All right,
but that's all part of being overmatched. When I ask about being overmatched, it's physically, it's mentally, it's preparedness, it's experience. All those things added together, they were completely overmatched on Saturday.
You guys also hit on the offensive line, which in turn led to the struggles in the running game. To your point, kind of, if you keep trying and trying without success against the defense, the size, strength, and caliber of the Trojans, isn't it just a matter of time till the passing game, or the quarterback in particular, well, suffers?
Well, yeah. I can't recall very many games where Oregon's passing game excelled while the running game was just getting torched. Because, of course, we all know this offense predicated on pace. The pace is established by the running game, et cetera, et cetera. And so when they were in a situation where it was clear, and I went into the game saying they need Royce Freeman and Tony Brooks-James to have big games today because there's no way they're going to run poorly in that. Herbert behind a young offensive line is going to be in third and long a lot and make enough plays for them to win. And sure enough, we saw that like the first three drives. They could not run, and they tried to throw on second, third, and long, and they could not complete passes and, or make plays at all. And right there, it was obvious. I was like, okay, yeah, this is not going to end well. So, yeah, Herbert, as good as I think he's going to become, they're not built for him to sit back there and throw 60 times to win. They need to be able to run the football, and they're just not ready to do that against a team like this. Now, it's fascinating to me, though, that they've regressed in that area since Nebraska. Because one of the things that came out of the Nebraska game was that, man, they, you know, Royce gets hurt, and they still rush for 300 yards, and all three backup running backs are killing it, and the offensive line basically led them on that 97-yard drive in the fourth quarter that gave them the lead. But since then, you know, they've just had trouble being consistent. And if they're not consistently running the ball, then Herbert's going to be hung out to dry.
Yeah, now, you guys brought up a point. I did kind of a follow-up and actually went depth chart by depth chart because you were talking about, all of you, the youth on the line, four redshirt freshmen, and I think it was Jordan who said the only other program right now starting a redshirt on the line is Colorado. Well, it's actually Tim Leinart of Colorado, Blake Brandel of the Beavs. That's the entire conference. There are two starting redshirts. Oregon has four alone. I know good programs, players, coaches, they don't make excuses, but you can't just dismiss what a factor that is.
No, you can't. And it annoys me to high heaven when people try to act like that's not significant and then try and poo-poo it when everyone has injuries. Well, yeah, everyone does have injuries, but we have a young offensive line and your best future NFL, maybe first, second-round pick, offensive tackles out. That has a ripple effect. We saw that with Jake Fisher. When you had a veteran offensive line, Fisher went out, how what that did to the offensive line. Now, the argument can be made, you know, because recruiting is such a big part of college football, and that's on totally the coaches, whereas in the NFL, you have a GM, you have salary cap, draft, et cetera. The argument can be made, well, hey, whose fault is it to start a bunch of redshirt freshman offensive linemen? Well, that's a great point. You're right. It's Helfrich and Greatwood's fault because some of the recruits they recruited in the interim between guys like Fisher, Johnstone, and Grasso didn't pan out to be ready to carry the offensive line, so they got beaten out by the 2015 class and from four guys who are now starting. So, yeah, you can make that argument. At the same time, they also recruited these young guys who are going to be phenomenal, I believe, as they progress. So, you know, it's just one of those stretches where, yeah, you hit a dry spell in offensive line recruiting coming off of three. I mean, you have three NFL guys. You know, you had Grasso, Fisher, and Johnstone together, all NFL-caliber guys, a second-round pick, a third-round pick, and a practice squad guy right now. And so, and then you went through a dry spell, and now I think all four of these guys and Crosby are all going to be in the NFL in some capacity. Every one of them will be in NFL camp. You know, where they're drafted, sure, I don't know. We'll see. So, but for right now, it's young. So it cracks me up. Like, after the USC game, there are some people going, yeah, this is bad. They're not improving. It's just, I'm like, dude, they have four redshirt freshman offensive linemen. They just went up against USC with their entire front sevens, 4- and 5-star recruits. They have more experience, and they're playing really well. They shut down Cal. They shut down Colorado, two of the best offenses in the conference. What did you expect? Like, if you went into that game, to me, if you went into that game looking for Oregon to play better against USC than it had been, then you're just not paying attention. There's not enough coaching in the world that's going to fix what their problem is right now, because that youth factor matters. And, you know.
Whoops. I think Mr. Fentress did the cutout with the hey, by the way, did you you took off on us for a second there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Here's what we last heard. The youth factor matters. Done. So you could pick it up from there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can't ignore that. And I just don't understand why people going into that game thought it was going to be different when it's still the same young kids. They're not going to all of a sudden in 1 week just become great. It's going to take time, and we saw evidence of that the other day.
You know, I thought you guys also made another interesting point as we continue with Aaron Fentress, Comcast SportsNet. You've heard things like attitude, are they enthusiastic, is there enough fire? And I think it was Joey that brought up after the game, because there's always so many guys from down there who was laughing and hugging and shaking hands after the game. But, you know, the game's over. I thought your point was interesting with youth. What might be perceived as an attitude issue, I think if I read you right, it was, can it be a matter of at that time you just have to accept who you are at that juncture?
Yeah, I Joey and Newman were a little harsher than I thought. And, I kind of assumed, like, maybe I'm missing something, you know. But I think sometimes when you get your tail kicked in, you just get your tail kicked in. And it is what it is. And, you know, I guess on one hand you could say they should be sulking more or they should be more upset. But I think sometimes when you're younger and you're not – you're in a situation where you didn't expect to lose and things are falling apart – and the maturity, the lack of maturity kicks in as well. And you're not sure how to exactly handle it. And plus, the other thing is, like, there was someone, there's a few people in the media who are complaining about, you know, seeing some players, you know, glad-handing and laughing with USC players after the game. And I'm like, dude, those are probably situations where guys have known each other since they were 10. Oregon has a bunch of players from California. They probably, you know, for all we knew, whatever media person saw that exchange, those two knew each other since, like, you know, fifth grade.
Right, fourth
and
or fifth grade.
Their mom's best friends. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so even though you lost, you're still going to be boys. You know, this isn't war. It's just a football game. But, you know, again, it comes back to me to, you know, the focus and maturity that you would want from your players. I think if they're older, I think if they're more mature, then maybe they react a little differently. But I would never, ever begrudge any player ever for – seeing their boys from back in the day and, you know, being happy to see them no matter what the score was.
I want to get to the defense. And again, I sometimes I feel like we discuss things that frustrated fans might not want to hear, but they're facts. You know, I thought Jalen Jelks played pretty well. He's a sophomore who's missed half the year. Die and Schooler have great qualities. They're freshmen. They were playing SC. I mean, how critical is it that, you know, in essence, they don't have a guy who could really just single-handedly wreck a play?
Yeah, they don't have a couple of impact studs who disrupt things on a consistent basis or where defense has to really pay attention to, so then that makes other people around them better. They lack that, and their best playmakers are still young. And I'm, you know, the whole Jelks thing is hilarious to me because I remember, you know, talking about, you know, when they really went on that slide about how they're 5 games into the season, Jelks and Dye had missed a combined 5 games, and they led the team with 2 sacks each. You know, I was like, okay, so do we really need to say more? Your 2 best pass rushers have missed a combined 5 games, and they only have 2 sacks each, which speaks, one, to the fact that they haven't played that much, but two, that no one else on the team can get 3 sacks in 5 games, not one other player. So it's, you know, now again, that comes back to what we said with the offensive line. Well, whose fault is that?
Yep.
Well, you know what? It's the coaching staff's fault for failures in some recruiting at some positions that put them in the position where they're playing all these young guys. They don't have, you know, instant senior, junior veterans sliding in there like Armstead or Tony Washington or even a Tyson Coleman caliber player. You know, and then you look at the situation. Canton Kamatule, who just retired, injuries pretty much did him in from day one. He had massive concussion issues his freshman year. He was supposed to be your stud. I mean, in an ideal world, he would be your Eric Armstead or DeForest Buckner on the defensive line right now.
Right.
And in an ideal world, Tarani Prevost, who's suspended, would be at least a Tyson Coleman out there right now. You blame the coaches for recruiting there, but at the same time, you look at the young talent and you say, wow, there are some guys on here who are going to be phenomenal. Give it time.
Let's get to the $10 million a year tweet that came from Darren Revell. And I found myself in good company because my first thought was, I'm in. I'd like it. And you said you'd like it. Helf wanted to know if he was getting it. But
right.
You hit on two what I thought were critical items. Any justification cutting loose the entire staff? Because, first of all, how important is it that people understand it's not just going to be the head coach? They bring in a guy like that, everybody goes.
Yeah, and that's my thing, man. It's like we're talking about one bad season, and I just think it would be completely classless on every level if you said, okay, guys, you know, all you guys have been here for the greatest successes in the history of this program, but you had a bad season. I mean, it's our first bad season in 10 years, and you know what? Y'all got to go. Oh, that's right. 2 years ago, you went to the national championship game, but, you know, that was all Marcus. Oh, wait, you guys recruited Marcus and developed him? Oh, we don't care. I mean, it would just, to me, it would just be completely classless to do that. So we'll see. Now, as far as the $10 million goes, you know, that was tweeted, not reported. Completely different.
Absolutely.
And as a reporter, let me just tell you that if that was solid sourcing on that, that he felt really, really good about that, there would have been a full-fledged report on it. Instead, it was just an innocent tweet. Well, not an innocent tweet, but just a tweet where you could just say, well, I heard this, but I haven't confirmed or verified or vetted it, and maybe kind of just a quip that someone threw out there, but I tweeted it because who holds anyone accountable for Twitter, right?
No, I use the term clickbait.
But he didn't even link it to a story. It was just a tweet.
I know. People.
It's even different than a clickbait. It's just like, hey, I heard a rumor. Throw it out there. Anyone can do that. You know how many rumors I hear that I don't tweet about? Because what? It's like, why would I put that out there? So, you know, to me, and again, I don't know what was said to him, but the fact that he didn't write a full-fledged report on it means to me that the source was soft. It was so, yeah. I mean, I can go into a bunch of examples of a situation like that, but to me, it wasn't very strong. So now you have to examine, okay, well, what are we talking about if you're spending $10 million? Well, if you're spending $10 million a year, if you're saying you're going to give someone a five-year, $50 million contract, you're trying to steal somebody. You're
right.
Trying to take somebody.
Right.
You're going high. You're calling Saban. You're calling Urban Meyer. You're calling Jimbo Fisher. You might even be calling Harbaugh. You know, you're calling Bob Stoops. Because it has to be someone completely elite. And it also, to me, it would have to be someone who's won a national title. Now, Harbaugh hasn't, but clearly he's an elite-level coach. He's been to a Super Bowl, et cetera, et cetera. But it has to be someone of that magnitude. Otherwise, why would you go out and throw that kind of money at a guy who maybe has never been to the playoffs or been to a national championship game? I mean, are you going to have to Clemson's coach? I mean, I was looking at the list of teams who have gone to the national championship game in the past few years. Like, who are you really going to go after throw that kind of money at him that's accomplished more than this coaching staff already has for you to make it worth it to blow these guys out? Now, I will say this. Although I don't think any of those marquee coaches necessarily would want to come to Oregon, money talks. If you're seriously talking about 5 years, $50 million, I think you could get someone big to bite. I would, you know, why would Bob Stoops, who's been at Oklahoma for 14, 15 years, not say, what? You're going to give me what? All I've accomplished at Oklahoma, I'm making $6 million a year. You're going to throw me what? Knowing that even if he comes there and doesn't win it all, he still gets $50 million. If he gets fired after 3 years, he still gets $50 million. You know, go somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? But the only thing I will say, though, about the whole going after coach thing, and my Twitter response to that was, you'd be better off spending $10 million on players. And what I meant by that was that, which of course would be a massive NCAA violation. But what I meant by that was that in 2014, I criticized the 2014 class when it was ranked like 23rd or 24th. And fans were just killing me. We win with 2- and 3-star recruits. We don't need big time. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. The offense is losing its potency in terms of being special. You're going to have to raise a level of talent. This is what I wrote about 2-3 years ago. You have to be recruiting in the top 10 to compensate for what's going to happen with the impact of the offense. And we've kind of seen that. And so you can't be a top 5 team if you're always recruiting between 17 and 28 in the recruiting classes. That just, the math doesn't add up unless you have something special going for you, which they did for a while, and now it's not so special. Now, if you can find a coach for big-time money who is going to put you in the top 10 in recruiting every year because he's just a superstar recruiter, and he can do it without cheating and getting you on the death penalty 5 years into it, that coach to me would be worth it, because I don't think it's about coaching necessarily. I think it's about having a continuous flow of talent, and I do wonder if this staff can continue to do that at that level, because it's never done it at that level. It's never been a perennial top 10 recruiting program ever. It's had a couple classes right on the fringe of the top 10, or maybe one that was like number 9 one year. So if you can get that, that person might be worth throwing that kind of money at him to bring that coach in. But still, I still think you keep the staff in place for at least one more year, give them a chance to turn around. I think they earn that, and then go from there.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you consider Reggie Bush got them in trouble for a $750,000 house, if you're going 10 mil, you can get Reggie Bush and Cam Newton and Khalil Mack and Sammy Watkins. I mean, why go halfway? All right.
Exactly.
I think your point is well taken. Hey, enjoy the rest of the week. Look forward to catching up with you on Saturday, Aaron. Always a pleasure.
All right. All right, buddy. Take care.
Take it easy.